Hello, I'm Terrence H. Winkless. This is number 0572, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0572. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Lenara Washington, one of the stars of the program on Urban Flix TV called Casting the Net. It's a comedy about three actresses that was created and written by Andrew P. Jones, who just happens to be Lenara's husband.
This show was written taking sort of different stories that he's heard about my experiences as a black actress, hearing experiences from a number of my fellow friends, and he pretty much catered this role to me, so I got very lucky with that. But beyond that, it's very real. A lot of these things are things that have actually happened in auditions, be it on set, the little moments you find yourself having to suck up your pride, or even those moments where you're feeling you're in it and everything is going exactly the way you thought and hoped.
Natalie Davis, the founder and program director of Verdant Square Radio, formerly GDPR Revolution 99, it's one of the homes of the Stuff File program.
It's pro-environment. We do a lot in terms of green lifestyles and green living. And more than anything, I wanted this to burst forth with verdant vibrance. The tone, the mood, things are very dark in many ways throughout my country, throughout yours, throughout other places right now. We want to inform people. We want to give them truth. We also want to bring them up in terms of how they feel so that when they turn off the radio, they feel happier.
Stuart Nullman is in with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nullman. Book Banter celebrates the life and career of one of baseball's memorable characters, Yogi Berra. So grab your catcher's mask and bottle of Yoo-Hoo. We're going to observe a lot by watching later on the Stuff File program.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0572, was a guest we had on the show just about a month ago. It's Terrence Winkless, the author of From the Inside, My Life as Bingo of the Banana Splits. And by the way, if you want to hear that interview, you can go back to 0568 to hear it. And if you want to buy his book, From the Inside, My Life as Bingo of the Banana Splits, you can find the link on this week's show as well, which you just heard him say, 0572. Thank you very much, Terrence, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make the show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? In the UK, a Bradford man has pleaded guilty to having sex with chickens, with his wife capturing the act on video. 37-year-old Halima Beg appeared in the dock alongside her 37-year-old husband, Rahan, for a hearing before a judge at Bradford Crown Court. Rahan entered guilty pleas to a total of 11 charges, including three of performing an act of penetration on chickens. He also admitted downloading indecent images of children, possessing extreme pornographic images related to sex acts with dogs and chickens, and drug offenses. Prosecutor Abigail Langford confirmed that Halima Beg had already admitted to three charges of aiding and abetting intercourse with an animal during the couple's first appearance before the magistrates. Halima pleaded not guilty to charges related to the extreme pornographic image and the drug matters. I have a question. At what point in a relationship do you feel so comfortable enough to say to your wife, honey, I think we need to spice up our time in the bedroom. I'm thinking chickens. Yeah, that's it. chickens, and you with a camcorder. Wow. You know, I've always said there is a definite line between erotica and pornography. Erotica is when you gently use a feather, and pornography is when you use the whole damn chicken. Yeah. Liberty County, Georgia sheriff's officers who found a body lying next to a railroad track in Allenhurst on July 14th followed protocol by covering the body with a sheet and waiting for the coroner. When the coroner arrived, detectives looked for injuries and quickly discovered the body was a female sex doll. The doll was fully clothed and was anatomically correct. Officials think they may have been the victims of a prank. Okay, my question is, were they the victims of a prank by civilians or by other officers? Ah, yes. Let the locker room and roll call briefing room hazing begin. Yeah. Andrea Balbi, president of the Gondola Association in Venice, Italy, announced on July 22nd that the organization is reducing the maximum capacity allowed on the iconic boats from 6 persons to 5. The change comes not because of social distancing, but because, said Balbi, over the last 10 years or so, tourists weigh more. He noted that heavier loads often mean the boats take on water, which makes it harder for the gondoliers to navigate in heavy traffic. Said Raul Roverati, the president of an association for substitute gondoliers, going forward with over a half a ton of meat on board is dangerous. Wow, that says so much about the tourists they get in Venice. Let's not try to guess where most of them are from. Let's just leave that as a mystery. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, 25-year-old Robert Berger of Huntington, New York, was scheduled to be sentenced last October after pleading guilty to possession of a stolen Lexus and attempting to steal a truck, but in an effort to avoid jail, he tried faking his own death, for which prosecutors charged him with that on July 21st. The scheme, they said, unraveled when authorities discovered a spelling error and inconsistencies in font styles and sizes on the fake death certificate submitted by his lawyer. Further, while Berger was dead, and I'm doing air quotes here, he was arrested in Philadelphia for providing a false identity to police and stealing from a Catholic college, said Nassau County District Attorney Madeline Singus. It will never cease to amaze me the length some people will go to avoid being held accountable on criminal charges. It's never a good idea to submit phony documents to the district attorney. Yeah, just like it's never a good idea to fool Mother Nature. Yeah, why do I get the feeling that prison time for this guy will have no rehabilitative properties whatsoever? This is a man who has no scruples. He might come out of jail and run for president, assuming he has the energy. But what would that be like?
Peter, you know nothing about my energy. You know nothing about what I'm doing. This will be catastrophic for our nation, and you'll see it. I'm always right about things like this. I guess I must be. I wouldn't be sitting here.
Anyway, let's get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Actress Lenara Washington is one of the stars of the new series Casting the Net, a comedy streaming on Urban Flix TV that follows three actresses who can't get a break, so with the help of a friend who is a casting director, they put out a fake casting call for a black female Western film. As the saying goes, hilarity ensues. Lenara joins us via Skype from Los Angeles. Hi, Lenara.
Hello.
Thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Now, I know television shows take a long time to go through the process of early production and putting a show up on the boards, as it were. Mm-hmm. But I'm wondering what has changed with the show, if at all, from conception to where we are now, considering the climate we're currently living in?
Oh, those are really great questions. I think that the writers, We as actors are all coming together trying to really consider how do we continue to put out content that's funny and interesting while also incorporating the many very different things that are, I think, top of mind for people today, for ourselves. You know, we have a majority Black cast, so there's a lot of stuff, as we all know right now, with the Black Lives Matter movement and police brutality, all these things going on, and how do we address those things? And, you know, it's an ongoing topic, I can say that much. It's something that we are really considering and want to make sure that we get it right as we can.
Yeah. So tell us about your role as Cassie in this show, and I gave a bit of a synopsis of the show. Did I do it justice in the introduction?
You did. You know, it's Cassie, Charisse, and Holly. They're friends. They're actresses, but they're all kind of in different. They all have different things going on in their lives, and Cassie's kind of the mom of the group. I want to make sure everybody's okay. I'm the one who always wants people to be on good terms. And I, of the three, am probably the one who works the most and is probably the least thankful about the fact that I have I have work that, you know, my fellow cohorts have not yet, you know, reached. I sort of take for granted sometimes where I am in my career. But we come together, I think, as a threesome with a really strong force. I mean, we're all very different, but when we come together, it's really powerful. And I think that's really what makes the show tick. These girls come up with this funny, you know, joke, essentially, to put on this movie that just in the hopes of getting their social media numbers up, not realizing that Hollywood is going to take on to it like wildfire. And now they're in a situation where they have to actually produce a movie or fear getting backlash.
Is it a bit of a stretch being an actress?
For me, no. I have to say, the writer, creator of the show, Andrew P. Jones, is my husband. And this show was written taking sort of different stories that he's heard about my experiences as a Black actress, hearing experiences from a number of my fellow friends. And he pretty much catered this role to me. So I got very lucky with that. But beyond that, it's very real. A lot of these things are things that have actually happened in auditions, be it on set, the little moments you find yourself having to suck up your pride, or, you know, even those moments where you're feeling you're in it and everything's going exactly the way you thought and hoped. I think it does a really good job of encapsulating what Hollywood can be like.
Well, since some of these stories do indeed come from your life, let's talk a little bit about that, because I know that your background, your dad was a preacher in the States, right?
My dad is a preacher's kid.
A preacher's kid, rather. And yes. And your mom is from Brazil.
Yes.
And you've moved around a lot. And I know what it's like to have at least one immigrant parent. It can be very tough on kids educational wise. So when you came out and said, I'm going to be an actress or an actor, what was that like in the Washington household?
Well, I think it was really hard, especially for my dad. My dad actually works in education. He currently is the vice chancellor of student enrollment at Villanova and has worked at schools like Amherst and Oberlin. And so when I went to college, my initial pursuit was to be a doctor, as I think that's probably the case for a lot of students when they go in and they aren't fully sure what they want to do. I was really good at math and science, and all my life, that's what I've been saying. I was going to be a doctor. And I came out and graduated and told him, you know, I took all that money you gave me for my MCATs and I'm putting it towards acting. That's what I'm going to do. He pretty much, I wouldn't say disowned me, but he did not really talk much to me. And I'm a kid who talks to her parents several times a day, even now. And so I think he felt it was a bit of a sting for him. And for my mom, you know, growing up in Brazil, not particularly well off, and working really hard when she came to this country, not speaking English, you know, holding multiple jobs to put three children through really good schools. I think it was a little tough for her, but she was a little less angry about it. But it took my dad giving a speech to his incoming freshman class one year, I think it was like in 2000, giving a speech to their parents about how you have to let your children discover who they are for the light bulb to finally go off and realize that that's what I was doing. I was discovering who I was and who I wanted to be. And since that moment, he has been my biggest cheerleader.
Yeah, that's usually the case, isn't it?
Yes. Yes.
Now, the other thing, too, is I understand you lived in like 14 states and also Brazil over the span of your childhood, which means you were basically, and I know you have two other sisters, correct?
Yes, two younger sisters.
Two younger sisters. So basically, you were always the new kid in school. That whole situation of literally reintroducing yourself, and in some cases, even reinventing yourself from time to time to time, doesn't that in any way, shape, or form lead to you being an actress?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, you have to get creative. You're forced to be creative when you're, you know, put into a new situation, especially some of these smaller schools we would end up at, where most of the kids in the community have known each other since birth. You know, I had to do what I had to do to fit in. And as you said, you know, there was a span of, I'd say 8 years when I was in a different school every year in a different state. So I got to reinvent myself. Some of these places we lived in, you know, we lived in Alma, Michigan, this little itty bitty town. Some of these people don't ever leave their little bitty towns, you know, and I was coming from places like New York on occasion, or, you know, I had a mom who was Brazilian. And so that was interesting. So I could use all these things to sort of create a different version of Linata. And if not so much different, but sometimes just a more interesting version of Linata. And I really do think it played a big role in my becoming an actor.
Do you think the moving around also really tightened your bond with your sisters?
When we were younger, for sure. For sure. I mean, we were each other's best friends. We were each other's playmates. I think there's, between me and my next sister, Laís, there are 2 years between us. And then between me and my youngest sister, there are 6 years. Leandra, my youngest, 6 years. And so we always had each other as playmates. I think there comes that time when you, again, you become your own person, and sometimes you look at your siblings and you're like, how did we get raised by the same parents? You know, we fell out of the same womb, we have the same mom and dad, but we are so different. But I see, like anything that's kind of cyclical, I see us coming back to each other again. I think it's because when we were younger, we fostered really strong relationships.
You've had a lengthy career so far, and you're now doing this television show, Casting the Net. But as you mentioned earlier, this is a show that was created by your and written by your husband.
Yes.
So what's that like as in a collaborative situation in a show like this?
Oh, it's actually quite great. Andy and I have always had a really great working relationship, and I think in part it's because we have a very high level of respect for what we each do. He is extremely thoughtful. He too, like my father, is one of my biggest cheerleaders. So he does what he can to, you know, really highlight my strengths and to help me shine. And so when we can come together on projects, it's a lot of fun. It's work. You know, we disagree sometimes, but I think because we have that respect, because we enjoy what we do, because we like to see each other succeed, it works out really well. And then it also, I think, helps our relationship in general as a couple, because when you're in a work setting, you have to sort of find ways to work through things you don't disagree in a manner that is both, polite might not be the right word, but that is, you know, you treat people in a certain way such that things work out. And sometimes in a relationship, you kind of let all those walls break down and you forget and you yell and you scream and you get upset. But I find that because we have a great working relationship, we also find ways to deal with the issues that come up in relationships, you know, a love relationship, with much more care.
Well, now that you're working together with your husband on this production, and you're involved in the decision making and all of that, is there a possibility that we can come full circle and you can find a small cameo role for your dad?
You know what? My dad would really enjoy it. He actually showed up In one of our films, our last film, we gave him a little part. He happened to be on set that day, and we're like, do you want to play a demon in this scene? And he said, sure. So it would be actually kind of nice to have him. My dad always wanted to go into entertainment. That's what was, that was his dream. And he just grew up in a time where that didn't seem like the most prudent thing for him to do. But
wait a minute. Let me just unwrap this for a second. So the man who didn't want his daughter to go into acting and almost disowned her, the son of a preacher plays a demon in your movie?
Yes. Yes, he does.
Oh, my.
Yes. Yep. And it's it was a lot of fun for him. My dad wanted to be a stand-up comic.
Wow.
And he has a little bit of a funny streak about him. And I think that, you know, had things been differently, had gone differently for him, you know, he desegregated his high school. I mean, my dad was one of those, you know, kids, you know, back in the day. Revolutionary.
Maybe you can write his story.
Yes. I it would be great. It would really, really, really great.
In the meantime, the show is called Casting the Net. It's streaming on Urban Flix TV. Lenata, thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Of course. Thank you so much. Anytime.
Lenara Washington, one of the stars of the new series Casting the Net, streaming on Urban Flix TV. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0572, and you'll find links to Lenara's site. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like. But the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, coming to you from Montreal, Canada, where we share the longest unprotected border in the world with the United States. Take that as a sign of extreme friendship or a warning.
And still to come in the program, we'll talk to the founder of Verdant Square Radio. Plus, Stuart Nolman is along with another edition of Book Banter. We also have an idiot of the day coming your way and much more Stuff File news here on the Stuff File program, which is heard everywhere, including on Stitcher, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify, just to name a few. You can find buttons for Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and iHeartRadio right on the website at thestufffile.com. And whichever platform you listen to the radio program on, please feel free to leave a review of the show on their site. It would be greatly appreciated. Now, let's get back to the stuff. Chris Markris of Hyde Park, Vermont, went skydiving on July 25th, but as he said, I think my adrenaline was so high and I was just so excited, I didn't realize I had lost it. It was one of Chris's two prosthetic legs. The double amputee was harnessed to an instructor and landed safely, but he didn't know where the leg ended up. His plea for help on Facebook was answered the next day by farmer Joe Marzolkowski, who found the prosthetic in his soybean field. Chris said the leg suffered a few scratches, but was otherwise unharmed. We kind of take for granted sometimes how many truly good people there still are in this world, he mused. Yeah, kudos to Farmer Joe on that one. I guess he found the leg outstanding in his field. Meanwhile, Mike Evans of Woodson Terrace, Missouri, went for a 5-mile float trip with friends on the Merrimack River on July 25th and decided to get out of the raft and walk behind it in the water for a bit. As the water got deeper, he had to swim to catch the raft, and as he climbed back in, Evans discovered his prosthetic leg was gone. Makes me think of that Canadian rock band, A Foot in Cold Water. Make me do anything you want. He searched with no luck, but a Missouri state trooper responding to a call nearby heard about the loss and coordinated a dive team to help. It took divers a couple of hours the next day to find the leg, saving Evans about $27,000 to replace it. Wow, that replacement would have cost him an arm and a... Oh, never mind. Said Evans, it was a happy ending to a stressful few days. Oh, I'm sure it was. If those divers didn't find it, Mike would have had to suffer the agony of defeat. By the way, nobody mentioned how many feet down the foot was. Another incomplete story. When an unnamed man returned to his home in Decatur, Illinois at 8:30 p.m., his wife started yelling at him for not washing the dishes and cleaning the house. The man, who had apparently arrived home from work, told his wife he wasn't going to wash dishes, so the 47-year-old woman hit him in the middle of his forehead with a dirty pan that she grabbed from the kitchen sink. This resulted in a bleeding laceration to his forehead. Police took the woman to jail and charged her with domestic battery, causing bodily harm. You know, I have a feeling that copies of this story will magically appear at dinner tables nationwide. Just as a sign. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, sometimes you have an itch you just have to scratch, and that is not always a euphemism. Unfortunately for this man, the itch he had was on his testicles. It was unfortunate, not just because it's never good to have itchy testicles, but because when you are in your car and trying to scratch them, it looks a lot like you're enjoying the pleasure of your own company. That is what prompted a woman in the same parking lot as this man to call the police. The woman told Port St. Lucie, Florida police she saw a man in his vehicle making an up and down motion in the area of his crotch. The woman didn't see his genitals, but believed the man was masturbating. Now, here's where things get bizarre. When police spoke to the man, he explained that he got the urge to scratch his testicles because he has a rash there. When they were disinclined to believe him, he pulled up his shorts and popped the boys out, showing the officers the, affected area. Police determined the man, who has no criminal history, did not expose himself and found no proof that he was performing lewd acts in public. You know, considering that it is almost never a good idea to whip out Jim and the Twins to show police officers, that must have been one hideous, blistered rash. I mean, you can just imagine that cop saying to him, "Oh, dear Lord, please just put that thing away and go home and see a doctor or an exorcist." Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? In the past on this show, you've heard me mention that one of the places you could hear the Stuff File program was GDPR Revolution 99, based in Nashville. You haven't heard me say that in a while. That's because they've now morphed into a new radio entity called Verdant Square Radio. So, what is this new entity? Let's find out. Natalie Davis, who was the founder and program director of GDPR, has the answers. And she joins us via Skype from New Jersey. Hi, Natalie.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks once again for being on the program. So, first of all, you have now relocated to New Jersey, correct?
This is correct.
And you have this new entity, Verdant Square Radio. Where does the name come from?
The name comes from, actually, the mood. It's pro-environment, so we do a lot in terms of green lifestyles and green living. It references the Green Party, which exists in the United States and other countries. And more than anything, I think, because, for example, our past color schemes have tended toward darker colors, I wanted this to burst forth with verdant vibrance. And that's where it comes from. The tone, the mood, things are very dark in many ways throughout my country, throughout yours, throughout other places right now. We want to inform people. We want to give them truth. We also want to bring them up in terms of how they feel so that when they turn off the radio, they feel happier than when they than before they turned it on.
What is the difference, if any, between the mandate of GDPR and what is now Verdant Square Radio?
I think more in anything, trying to focus on the mood aspect of it. Positivity is a huge, huge thing. We are seeing a lot of people contending with big issues and big crises. And we have to focus on those, and we have to focus on them in truth. But I think if we're going to get through this in a place where we're all healthy and more unified than we are, then I think it helps us to bring a brightness to it so that people feel that there's actual hope, because I really do believe there is.
Now, in this old incarnation, it was just an online radio station before. Now there's a network involved. There are various locations now as opposed to just what was before Nashville. You're now in New Jersey, but there are other places. Explain the network and how it works.
Well, the network is essentially an offshoot from the radio. They work hand in hand. It serves essentially as the expanded newsroom. Right now, we have branches in New Jersey, in Maryland, in Pennsylvania, and in Tennessee. Eventually, we hope to have that in many more places. The idea is that every area, or as many as we can reach, will have a local site where they can find news that is specifically geared to their area, and also give them an opportunity for local community building as well.
So what will the programming be on Verdant Square Radio? And again, how different, if at all, will it be from what was on GDPR?
Not a whole lot different. I mean, there will be some additions and there will be some subtractions. But on the whole, sonically and in programmatically, we're doing essentially the same thing, providing access to news and points of view that tend to get ignored in the mainstream media. And so we are doing that, and we're doing that hard, simply because it's quite clear that the news that's being left out is exactly the news that people need to be hearing. On top of that, we are also boosting our cultural offerings. Because I believe during the GDPR days as well, you need a respite. You absolutely need a respite. And I believe the best respite you can find is in music and in comedy and in storytelling. And also in just regular old life programming, in terms of food, in terms of recycling, in terms of gardening, all sorts of things. I think the totality of it all makes a product that essentially addresses every aspect of our lives. If we take the advice that we hear, and it's all really good stuff, and we add it to what we're doing, hopefully it'll make such a positive addition to their lives. It'll make them more cognizant of living in a way that's healthier and also better for the planet. It'll make them better informed, so they can make better informed decisions as voters and as citizens. And more importantly, is to the way in which they engage with the rest of their community, hopefully positively, with hope, but also with a resolve that things have to get better and we should all come together to fix it.
Now, for those who aren't familiar or were not familiar with GDPR and are curious about Verdant Square Radio, give us an idea of some of the shows that one will be able to find on the network.
On the news side, we offer things that are well-known, I think, to many progressive radio listeners. Democracy Now!, the Tom Hartman Program, Ring of Fire Radio. These tend to be very news heavy political shows. We have wonderful peace progressive arena talk show hosts who just their individual takes on things provide a lot of food for thought. I'm talking about people like Nicole Sandler and Rick Smith, who's a labor activist from Pennsylvania, or David Pakman, who always gives a very thoughtful, progressive point of view, but from the centrist lane. I think that there is value in every nuance. If we can hear it all, we can make our own decisions and make better choices, I think. But moving on to the arts, we have wonderful music shows from a variety of genres. My favorite among them, because I'm a Broadway baby, is one that's called Footlight Parade, which just every week is a different theme. And they present Broadway shows from across the eras that match that theme. And it's just a wondrous hour of music. We've got the Wood Songs Old Time Radio Hour, which is from Kentucky and presents a great, if not always well-known, although sometimes exceedingly well-known, artists who come and just perform brilliantly for their audience, including what they call Wood Songs Kids, young people with amazing musical talent who we will probably be lining up to see in 20 years. Another great show, Ozark Highlands Radio. We're not forgetting our Southern listeners. We wanted to have Appalachian content, so we've got this for them, and this was a very popular one. We have E-Town out of Colorado, which is music plus pro-environment activism. So it's all really, really positive. It's about embracing art and doing good with it. So a lot of things along those lines.
I remember because the Stuff File program was on your station, and there was a show that was on after me that dealt with words.
That show is called Away with Words, and yes, it's coming back.
I love
and
that
yes,
show.
It will be following you. You guys are such a great team as far as shows go, simply because you're both very witty and very intelligent. You guys are perfect for each other. And the listeners have told us that as well.
So that's Away with Words.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about, again, for those who are not familiar, the people who are doing that show.
Oh, this is a bad thing to do with me after I've just been playing with a six-year-old. I'm sorry, the host's names are just escaping me at the moment. But what the show is about is a love of language. If you go throughout the continental United States, you will find so many different sayings and etymologies and old wives' tales that inform the slang and colloquial language that's used today. What that show does is it brings people together in the love of language of all kinds and finding the beauty in every bit of it and telling stories through that.
It is a great show. I love listening to that one. So the new network, Verdant Square Radio, the launch date is?
It is Monday, August 3, 2020. That would have been a whole lot sooner, but we have a pandemic to thank for that. But we're getting it done. We actually had spent the time focusing just on our newsroom. And dealing with areas we serve that are coronavirus hotspots, such as Nashville. My neighborhood there is a mess. My roommate passed away from it. It was important to us to focus on that. And we will continue doing that as well, but sliding back into the main lane, which, of course, is Verdant Square Radio.
And we should mention at the time of this airing, it will have just launched. So Verdant Square Radio, people can find out more information about it by going to the website, which is verdantsquare.net, correct?
That is our newsroom, yep. You can also find the station directly at verdantsquareradio.com.
verdantsquareradio.com. Excellent. Natalie, thank you very much for being on the program with us. Thanks for still supporting the Stuff File program and continued success with this new venture.
I thank you so much, and thank you for having me, Peter. We love what you do, and we're so glad you're on the team.
And we're glad to be there. That's Natalie Davis, the founder and grand poobah of Verdant Square Radio. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0572, and you'll find the link to Verdant Square Radio. Also, Natalie was having a bit of a brain freeze and momentarily forgot the names of the host of Away with Words. It's a public radio show that's hosted by Martha Barnett and Grant Barrett. That's a really fun show, and it's on right after the Stuff File program on Verdant Square Radio. And the Stuff File program is heard on Verdant Square Radio Mondays at 4 p.m. Eastern. So there you go. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holden.
Got something for the mailbag? Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. Send your email to mailbag@thestufffile.com. And remember, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's mailbag@thestufffile.com. Or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Often I mention my book, Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. I also often mention that I'd like you to become a patron of the Stuff File program via Patreon.com. Well, this is my opportunity to combine both of those pleas to you. You've heard me say on many occasions about the myriad of celebrities I've had the chance to talk to that are contained in my book, which is published by Bear Manor Media. You've also heard me mention that some of the celebrities in my book, and many others, can be heard on our page at Patreon.com. Well, if you've been on the fence about joining Patreon, let me try to pull you over to our side. By becoming a patron, you help to make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. And if you do become a regular patron, as a Patreon reward, I'll share with you an electronic version of my book for your e-reader. So join Patreon and claim your copy of Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. Sign up today at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nauman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And with us once again, minus peanuts and Cracker Jacks, it's Stuart Nauman. Hi, Stu.
Hi, Peter, and I hope I do come back the way things are going with the baseball season. I hope I do come back.
Yes,
but,
yes.
Yeah, it's a good idea. But on this edition of Book Banter, if you can't get into the ballpark, you could read about some of the glory days of baseball, and and some of the great players. And we have one in particular. We're talking about Lawrence Peter Yogi Berra. He was not only one of the greatest catchers in the history of Major League Baseball, but also one of the most colorful characters the game has ever seen. The stocky, happy-go-lucky guy with the gap-toothed smile from St. Louis will always be remembered for his sense of humor, how he set the standard for sports celebrity endorsements by being the spokesman for a number of products such as Puss in Boots cat food and Yoo-hoo chocolate beverage, and of course his charmingly mangled sayings called Yogiism, such as, you can observe a lot by watching, it's deja vu all over again, and of course the unforgettable, it ain't over till it's over.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. However, there is more to Yogi Berra than just chocolate drinks and funny sayings. During a major league career that spanned 17 years, and all of them with the fabled New York Yankees, Berra hit 358 home runs, chalked up 1,430 RBIs, had 2,148 hits, played on 10 World Series championship teams with the Yankees, won the American League MVP award three times, appeared in 15 All-Star games, and won a National League and an American League pennant as a manager, and, of course, was elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Meanwhile, his son Dale did absolutely nothing.
Yeah, so who's laughing now at Yogi? No one, especially not veteran sports journalist and author John Pessa, who set out to discover the public and private Yogi Berra and see what made him such a productive player on the diamond and such a much-beloved person even to this day off the diamond. And the end result is this epic biography called Yogi, A Life Behind the Mask. And this is probably one of the best baseball biographies I've read since Jane Levy's biography about Babe Ruth, which was called The Big Fella, that was published 2 years ago. And Pessa's done a magnificent job through such diligent and thorough research to come up with this complete multidimensional portrait of Yogi. First, the reader visits The Hill, the Italian neighborhood in St. Louis, where Yogi was born and raised, where family values reign supreme, and Yogi created the foundation of his baseball career alongside lifelong best friend and future Cardinal catcher and baseball broadcaster Joe Garagiola. From there, you explore the cavalcade that was That was Barra's entertaining career in baseball. He transcended three generations of Yankee teams, became the reluctant darling of the managers he played under, and later became a friend and mentor to subsequent generations of players, whether they played for the Yankees, Mets, or Astros. Those are the three teams that he was involved with. And then there's Yogi, the astute businessman who managed to buck the trend of players from his era who managed to get regular jobs during the offseason for supplemental income. But he did it by being a successful pitchman for a number of products and businesses and building a bowling alley in New Jersey with Yankee teammate Phil Rizzuto, which he later sold at a substantial profit, not to mention the booming business in memorabilia and card show appearances, which kept the Yogi Berra name alive. But Pessa also focused on the pain of being Yogi Berra, which includes the lack of faith from baseball scouts, fellow players in the press during his early years in the majors, betrayals from the Yankee front office staff, especially the notorious George Steinbrenner, who fired Berra as manager of the Yankees after only 16 games during the 1985 season, which led to a 14-year feud and personal boycott of Yankee Stadium games and appearances. And then there was a heartbreaking experience when his youngest son, Dale, who we mentioned just earlier, who played for the Pirates and the Yankees, had to testify against a drug-dealing ring in baseball, as well as confront his own addiction to cocaine.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. But there's also, of course, Berra's unique sense of humor, which was a major part of his universal appeal. And one of my favorite examples in the book happened when Yogi visited a Yoo-hoo bottling plant in New Jersey. And while in the plant executive's office, he answered a phone call in which the person on the other end of the line asked him if the name Yoo-hoo was hyphenated. And in typical Yogi fashion, he replied, "No, ma'am, it isn't even carbonated." I love that. But no matter what he went through, Pessa portrays Yogi Berra as a man who had a genuine love for baseball and felt a sense of peace and happiness whenever he put on a team uniform, arrived at a ballpark hours before a game, or shared his years of baseball stories and skills to any audience he faced. So Yogi, A Life Behind the Mask, is a wonderful biography of a wonderful person who became not your typical baseball legend, but was widely adored for that. In fact, the legend that is Lawrence Peter Yogi Berra will never be over till it's over. And this book is a major reason for that.
One of the other lines he mentioned, speaking of lines, is didn't he say that one of the reasons a particular nightclub or a restaurant, he said, the lines are too long, that's why nobody goes there anymore?
Yeah. He mentioned that about Ruggeri's, a very popular Italian restaurant in the Hill in St. Louis, which was very popular when he was growing up and even more so during his time as a player. So, yeah, that's where the reference was made to.
Now, you're a baseball fan. I'm a baseball fan. We're both interested in baseball history. You say this is a great book.
Yeah.
But isn't the timing of this book kind of odd? And the reason why I say that is, as time goes on, Yogi's aura is not as big as some of the bigger guns of the Yankees' heyday. And certainly the audience that were fans of Yogi are kind of dying off. So who's the audience for this book?
Well, I mean, there's always, diehard baseball fans. I mean, for any generation, there's still a lot of people who love the history of the game. There's also, he was also a very, he always appealed to all ages. So he also appealed to the youth, especially right up to his passing in 2015, because he had a museum and learning center in Montclair, New Jersey, not far from his home. So he had a lot of appeal with fans of all ages. Mm. And just so showing that he was more than just that sort of comic book kind of character of a baseball player, he was quite a talented player.
Yes, he was. Absolutely. So the book is entitled
Yogi, A Life Behind the Mask by John Pessa. It's published by Little Brown, and it's $38.
And what other books do you recommend in a similar genre? Although there are just so many, aren't there?
Oh, yes, I know. I had a tough time trying to narrow down the suggestions. But first, if you want a little bit more Yogi, there's the Yogi book that Yogi put together in the late 90s, which is a collection of his great sayings, the stories behind them, a timeline of his career, and also appreciation of Yogi Berra by fans, celebrities, journalists, fellow players. So there's that. And also Jane Levy, who's becoming quite the premier baseball biographer, her previous two books, one about, well, two Yankees, one about Mickey Mantle called The Last Boy, and the one that I mentioned just earlier in the review about Babe Ruth called The Big Fella.
Excellent, excellent. Great books indeed. And how can people find you, Mr. Nolman?
Well, you won't find me at Yankee Stadium right now, although I wish I would be.
You wouldn't find anyone at Yankee Stadium right now unless you're a cardboard cutout.
Yeah. Oh, well, if you may see it, but, you know, it's a little bit not as tall as the other cardboard cutouts at Yankee Stadium. But you can find me in the pages of not the New York Times, but the Montreal Times. You can go there on print or every week at www.mtltimes.ca.
Thank you very much to Stuart Nolman with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about a racetrack for this edition of the Stuff File program. We do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on. Plus, I got a few more Stuff File news stories to share with you here on a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio, and also iHeartRadio and Spotify. Okay, what are the chances? You've stolen a car and you're feeling pretty good about yourself. You made a clean getaway and you're cruising down the street looking forward to enjoying your ill-gotten gains when, crash, you get run into by another car. Another car that just so happens to be chased by police. Chased by police for being stolen. Police in Newburgh, Oregon said officers responded to a report that someone had just stolen a Toyota Land Cruiser. The officers spotted it moments later and the driver tried to elude police, but the driver, identified by police as 27-year-old Randy Lee Cooper, crashed into an occupied Buick Regal and was taken into custody. Officers then learned the Buick had also been stolen in an unrelated incident reported about 3 weeks earlier. The Buick driver, 25-year-old Kristen Nicole Begu, was also arrested. She's accused of driving under the influence of intoxicants and unauthorized use of a motor vehicle. Meanwhile, Cooper is accused of crimes including unauthorized use of a motor vehicle, attempting to elude police, assault, and reckless driving. You know, this could be a match made in heaven between Kristen and Randy. They both have similar likes, and they'll have plenty of time to think about each other while they're behind bars. Police in Italy said they searched a package addressed to a fictional mafia boss and discovered it contained 4.5 ounces of cocaine hidden inside hollowed-out coffee beans. Police said customs officers checked the contents of the package after they noticed it was addressed to Santino D'Antonio, a fictional organized crime boss from the movie John Wick Chapter 2. Investigators discovered the package contained more than 500 coffee beans that had been hollowed out, filled with cocaine, and reassembled with dark brown tape. Police said a 50-year-old man who attempted to claim the package at a tobacco shop in Florence was arrested. Okay, here's my deep burning question. Who has the time to hollow out 500 coffee beans? And yet, even though you can go to all that trouble, you can't pick a better name than a movie mafia boss? Why not just use Vito Corleone? I mean, seriously. Little creativity guy, come on. Anyway, it's that moment you've all been waiting for, boys and girls. It's time now for the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
An Orem, Utah man who told police he had video evidence of his ex-girlfriend engaging in illegal activity is now in trouble himself after officers inquired about how he got his video. The 28-year-old, who hasn't been publicly identified, was charged in 4th District Court with voyeurism, a Class A misdemeanor, and witness tampering, a third-degree felony. On July the 6th, the man went to the Orem Police Department to say he believed his former girlfriend was engaging in prostitution and then showed the officer video footage that he had recorded from her bedroom showing the victim in her underwear with another man. That's when the officer asked if the woman knew there was a camera in her room. The man claimed she did know, but when the officer spoke to the woman, she said the ex-boyfriend had sent her an email and told her to tell police that she knew about the camera and to not, quote, say anything stupid, unquote. The woman said she was not aware that there was a camera placed in her bedroom and that she was not aware that she was being recorded. Clearly, this is several levels of stupid. I mean, why would you surreptitiously record your ex having sex, then take said recording to the police department, then send an email to your ex, explaining that you recorded her with another man without her knowledge, but when the cops ask about it, she should go along with it? I mean, why would you expect any of this to work out in your favor? One reason, and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0572. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0572. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, Verdant Square Radio, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on Apple or Google Podcasts, streaming on Spotify, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. No animals were harmed in the production of this program, except, of course, the tasty ones. Good night and pass the paprika.